Welcome to episode 12. I'm Emily Reese from June Media, and this is music by Grant Kirkhope for Civilization Beyond Earth. More from Grant soon. First, let's jam.
This is the man, my man. Oh, this is the man, all man. Oh, this is the man, the man. All man. Oh, this is the man.
That's Aaron Heatbox Heaton. Aaron is a beatboxer, clearly, and he's making a game, like, all on his own. He's doing everything. All the coding, all the voiceover, he wrote all the music, he's made the trailers, he did the website. It's called Robots in the Wild. What made you want to make this game?
I've always been trying to make games since I was a little kid. Do you remember Commodore 64 computers back in the day?
Big time.
My uncle left my mom my uncle was a nerd, and he had upgraded to a better computer and gave us his old Commodore 64 to my mom.
Nice.
And I was like 3. And he gave me just a stack of floppy disk games. And he's like, here you go. And I was like, wow. And I was way better than my parents at the games already. And so they were like, well, there he goes. He loves those things. And me and my friends always tried to make games too on the Commodore 64. And we would look up these really dry, obscure programming books because we wanted to make really fun games, but they were so dry and so boring when you're 5.
Yeah.
We were just like, I don't know how we're going to do this ever. So I guess all through my life, this is probably like my 7th game I've tried to actually make.
We will set up, turntable, one.
It looks really fun. It's, you know, you're building these complexes, right? So describe a little bit about why you're building them, what happens when it gets dark, all that kind of stuff.
The initial concept was I thought it would be cool if a monster would come out of one side of the screen, and then on this side of the screen, you'd be building a base out of these different parts. And then it'd be fun to get creative with how you would make the base. And then that idea totally evolved into this other kind of thing where there's a society of little heart robots, and they live in a spaceship, and the spaceship gets smashed by an asteroid, and all the heart civilians go flying across the universe. And now you have to rescue them. So you're still making the core idea the same, where you're making a base.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a story where you have to rescue the little heart people from the surface of all these planets and get them back to their spaceship.
And so you've written music for it, too.
So far, I think about 12 pieces of music, ranging in length from little loops that just play during a menu to big grand things in the beginning and the entrance of the game.
So since you're also a super talented beatboxer, that's something where you're working with loops all the time in your head, right? As you're building these pieces. So it seems like that would be such a good fit for you to do video game music. I think sometimes composers, especially when they're getting into the industry, struggle with that concept of making a seamless loop back to the beginning. But you seem like you're probably pretty good at that part.
That's funny because maybe actually the video game music is what trained me how to loop beatboxing, you know?
Sure.
I was exposed to that first. I actually never thought about that way, but yeah, all video game music pretty much loops all the time, so.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
So tell me about the type of music you wrote then. What kind of feel were you going for? What kind of soundscape do you want to create with this game?
Do you play a lot of games?
Oh, yeah.
Did you play Mario Galaxy?
Super Mario Galaxy!
I loved those games so much. Like, the whole time I was playing it, I was like, this game is made by geniuses. Like, seriously, geniuses.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful and so epic and so awesome and so fun. So I wanted epic kind of orchestra music like that.
Uh-huh.
And then my goal on every tune is to have orchestra music and synthesizer sounds for the robot aspect.
Sure.
To kind of make those together, and epic robot music was what I was going for.
what games are you playing now?
Minecraft is a huge one for me. I love that game. Me and my friend run a small server. We're about 14 of people that we know. Like one guy's from Australia and whatever. We all get on there sometimes.
Sure.
And we played a game called Don't Starve.
Yes.
I love that game.
Yes.
The nighttime scary aspect of Robots in the Wild was big time inspired by how scary Don't Starve is at night. What's another one I'm playing? Prison Architect. You ever tried that one?
No, I've never heard of that.
It's one of those tycoon kind of games where you are the guy that designs a whole prison and watch little inmates and little security guards run around and try to escape, and they try to not let them escape, and you got to design a really good system of doors and stuff.
Tell me a little bit about then getting into music. I mean, we talked about your background in gaming. I'd love to know how the music thing started for you.
I was always in choirs, and I did like the high school musical and stuff, and I was a big nerd and thought that was fun.
Sure.
And I played the tuba for 7 years, did all that. So actually, I always considered the tuba training beatbox training, probably, because it's just big lungs and the whole time. So I was being secretly trained to be a professional beatboxer my whole life. I just didn't know it.
With the tuba.
Yeah.
When did you start toying around with the beatboxing?
Yeah, that's probably like 2000. I mean, I graduated in 2000, and then everybody in my high school was all beatboxing all the time. So
really?
It got really popular in my high school for a while. And so at all the parties, I would always end up beatboxing in the garage while a bunch of other white dudes were trying to freestyle and stuff. And like, I joined this band called Root City Band, and I was like the hype man to the lead singer. And that was a weird fit because they were actually kind of a blues band at the time. So,
oh, interesting.
But I was really good friends with all the guys in the band. And then I found my first loop machine, and then that let me make songs for the first time instead of just doing kind of like tricks. And I always call them tricks. I could actually do songs. And then I made a record in 2006 was my first record. And then I've made 3 records since then.
I mentioned earlier how, you know, there's a video that I saw of you beatboxing to Tetris. Have you incorporated other video game music into your vocabulary that way?
Yeah, I was throwing some Mario in there for a while and some Duck Hunt.
Nice. Duck Hunt.
Duck Hunt was actually a trick. I would call it a trick. It's more of a sound effects and stuff than an actual song. But I just throw in between 2 other songs for a couple seconds, and people are like, just to see who in the crowd's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Exactly. Where can people learn more about your game and buy it and support all of your artistic endeavors?
Robotsinthewild.com. Robots-in-the-wild.com is where you can download free demo on PC or Mac. And then heatboxllc.com is where the music stuff comes from. I just recently signed a contract with a marketing company. It's my first time doing anything like that. And I'm excited to get it on Steam, try to get green light and early access. And I just like to make this my main career. I've been traveling a lot for the last 12 years. And if I could take some time off from traveling and make video games at my house and drink coffee and stuff, that would be really my dream come true. And then take that and start a small company, a team of people, and make games that we're passionate about would be the absolute dream for me. Everybody's got to see the light, out of the sun. Everybody's got to see the light, out of the sun. Now
everybody's got to see the light, out of the sun. Learn more about Aaron Heatbox Heaton online at patreon.com/junemedia. You might be familiar with Grant Kirkhope's music from Banjo-Kazooie or maybe Viva Piñata. And if you've never heard his music for Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, seriously go listen to it after you hear this episode. Grant's newest music is in a Civilization game. The new Civilization game came out last year. It's called Civilization Beyond Earth. and the expansion just came out not that long ago, and it's called Beyond Earth Rising Tide, and Grant's music is amazing. It's so nice to hear your voice and chat with you, and thank you so much for all the support you've been giving. It's been just really kind of you and helpful, so thank you.
No, I sometimes forget to do it, so you can just message me and say, can you tweet this out? Because I'll do it every day if you want. I don't mind at all. So I just forget sometimes. No. So if I spot it, I'll do it. But sometimes I miss it. So if you got something to tweet out, I'll just do it. Just let me know.
Okay, I will. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. Mm. And this music that you sent me is amazing. Should we talk about it?
Well, as long as you like it, I suppose.
I'd love to. I would love to, because I was just surprised at every turn and really, really impressed with the whole... Every single piece is like a whole piece, and I loved that. So before we get too far ahead, and before I just lather you with too much praise, let's start off with how you got involved, because you wrote for the actual main game, Civilization Beyond Earth, and then you wrote also some music for the expansion. So how did you get involved in the game in the first place?
It was because I worked in Baltimore at Big Huge Games, mm-hmm. When I did Kingdoms of Amalur. And a guy there called Will Miller and David McDonough, who worked at Big Huge Games at that point, and they'd come from Firaxis and then went to Big Huge Games and then went back just before it all went bad with Big Huge Games as a wise move. And Will really liked the Amalur stuff, and I think he'd been keen to try and get me involved for a while, but just couldn't find the right project to get me on. And they had like in-house composers and stuff there, so it was difficult. Yep. You know? And then Michael Curran, who was one of the, he'd been at Firaxis a long time, so I knew those guys because we're in the same area in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. He quit Firaxis and went to work at Stardock, I think. So that left a gap in their composer things. And so Will kind of called me straight away and said, would you like to do some music for Civ? And I was like, of course I would. About that, I didn't know it had gone into space. I just thought it was just another Civ game, you know. Mm-hmm. So Jeff Knorr, also, who's kind of the lead composer, because he actually worked at Firaxis for a while, and then quit to be freelance. So there's him and me, and Michael did some, and then Griffin did the ambient sound effect tracks for the first game. And then the second game, it's just me and Jeff, and Griffin wrote one of the pieces.
So you wrote 5 tracks for the main game and 5 tracks for the expansion.
Yeah.
So the game is set in the future. It, you know, there's travel to space, you're conquering alien worlds and, you know, giving them economies and the like.
Yeah.
So this is a hybrid score, meaning you've got a nice mix of electronic instruments and acoustic instruments. But let's talk about all these wonderful acoustic instruments you have. There's all these great solos like oboe and horn and clarinet and flute. Talk to me about the sound world and kind of designing that style for the game.
I really like to use all the instruments in the orchestra, I guess because I've had that kind of classical upbringing. Mm-hmm. That I just, you know, that's how I like to do it, really. Like in Viva Pinata and games like that in the past, I kind of really like the woodwinds a lot. Mm. And I'm a brass player, so I like the brass. I like, you know, I play trumpet. I was classically trained trumpet player, so I like to use brass a lot as well. Yeah. So I always like to give lots of solos, and I'll always like to write lots of melody as well if I can possibly help it. Mm-hmm. I think that I mean, every composer loves to write melodies, just that sometimes these days people don't want to hear them a little bit, you know, which is a bit annoying.
Yes.
So it was great to have that kind of opportunity just to kind of go for it, really. First game, I mean, Will and David just said, you know, I got given the arid planet, so the desert planet, and said, you know, just write some epic, hopeful music. And I was like, is that it? They said, yeah, that's it. Just to go and do that. I couldn't believe it, you know. So getting to have the chance to do that and to, you know, just really go for it. And I must admit, I did hold back a little bit in the first game because I was a bit frightened that they might go, oh my God, Grant, you've gone too far. This is way too big, you know. So I kind of, it was kind of a little bit understated, I thought, for the first game. Because mm-hmm. I kept getting bigger and bigger, and no one sort of said stop. They just said, yeah, great, that's great. It was like, all right, I'll just go bigger. So, you know, I got a bit like that. So I think I wanted to try, you know, James Newton Howard, James Hornery, sort of Star Trekky, you know, that kind of sound mm-hmm. I was thinking of at the time. Mm-hmm. It's got those kind of classic kind of sequences that really make people think of space and exploration and, you know, other worlds. And so, you know, trying to weave in melodies amongst those kind of chord sequences that featured those instruments in the orchestra. It was fantastic fun to do, and it was sort of right up my street, really. I love to write music like that.
And you mentioned epic and hopeful, and one of the things I was thinking about, one of the common things I find in video game music is that there's a really, you know, serious epic game, and the music is just heavy and dark and serious, and this is not that at all. It's serious, of course, but in a different way, right? It, like you said, it's epic and hopeful, and that completely changes the tone of a game, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the plan was to cut kind of every piece is supposed to get slightly more hopeful as it goes along. I think every planet had like six or five pieces, something like that, five or six. Mm-hmm. And so you'd start off with something that was a bit kind of investigative, and you'd kind of think about it to be a bit more understated. But by the end of it, it was like it's superhero time. You know, not hero time, but like, yeah. You know, you've won and it's going to be great. You've won the game and all that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. everything kind of steps along like that. Every stage it was hopeful. Like at some point in the piece I'd use some minor chords and they'd go, oh, that's not quite right, it doesn't sound quite right, so I'd have to change a little bit here and there. Because mm-hmm. I kept thinking, to be uplifting all the time, I thought surely they can't want that, but they did. this is fantastic. You know, it was so, it got to that bit where it was just like it was super uplifting all the time, so you just kind of let yourself run away with it, really, you know. So it was a bit like that. And I think sometimes a lot of the video games these days can be very serious. And I think you do tend to get, like I get to write music for, you know, quite comedic games, and also the kind of serious games that get to do both sides, really. But it seems to be that the comedic ones are happy, but they're not hopeful. They're not got the epicness to them. They're more kind of, you know, comedic stuff. And the kind of the bigger games or the more serious games are very dark, like you say. So Civ sort of sits in the middle somewhere where it's not comedic, but it's very hopeful, and it's very, you know, it's got that kind of uplifting feel to it.
So you mentioned that, you know, the first game you kind of held back a little bit, and then with the expansion, you just let her rip. So talk to me about what that was like to write the music for the expansion then.
I know, like when they called me and said, oh, you know, we've got another one, would you do the next game? I was like, fantastic, you know. So I thought, this time I'm just going to go for it until they say, whoa, that's way too much, Grant, you know.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to that last piece, Fractal Aquion, I don't know how you pronounce it, mm-hmm. I was just like letting everything rip at that point, you know, and no one said anything. It's like, that's great. Yeah. So it's a bit like that. So I think I was more prepared for the second game. I think at this first game, it was a bit quick, and I wasn't quite sure, you know, how it was going to go, but I really understood it by the second time round. Pieces do slowly scale up, and like sort of correctly. There's certainly a kind of build through them, and the main theme kind of pops up all the way along, and you know, that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. It was just like, you know, super fun to do that and to revisit it again. And also, I was kind of hoping I got the ice planet, because I like writing that ice music. It was nice to have that kind of mixing those the kind of icy sounding synths to give it that kind of otherworldly, great, huge expanse of ice world. I'd get the ice well. I didn't know, and I was lucky that I got it, so that was just great.
That's awesome. Mm. There's a piece called The Dendrite Frontier, and there's a flute line in it almost 2 minutes in. It's not quite 2 minutes in, and it's fabulous. Every single time I hear it, I rewind it so I can hear it again. And then you have the strings do something similar a little bit later in that piece. So talk to me about The Dendrite Frontier.
I need to just go, can I just listen to that for 1 second?
Yeah,
to make
sure of course.
Yeah, I'll just be 1 second. It's just to go across here.
Yeah.
The thing is, because when you write them, you just kind of call them Ice 1 and Ice 2 and Ice 3.
Right.
And they think of the titles later, so... You know, I never remember what they're called.
Right.
I can remember Fractal Aquilon, because that's one at the end. And I can remember Ice and Conquer, because that was a kind of battle. But I forget the rest of them.
So,
The Dendrite Frontier. Yes, I suppose, like, that's called, that's just a name picked out of an area on the map. It's not. I don't think it actually references that kind of section. It's just looking for titles for things to call them.
Sure, yep.
So I was just trying to write something that was flowing and that was had, like, a meaning to it and a good melody, and I love writing for flute. It's probably one of my favourite things to write for, because it always sounds fantastic no matter what you do with it. So it's just such a great instrument. I mean, when I did Viva Pinata, it's just full of flute solos.
Yeah.
So, it's such a great thing to write for. So I think I just wanted to write something that was heavenly, sort of, and icy, and mm-hmm. all that stuff rolled into one. It's difficult to put into words, really. The Dvořák Hall in Prague with the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra.
Out of here. Wow.
So it's all live, and the synths were added. But the synths were in the MIDI mock-ups, and then you kind of mix them back in later. So, both games were completely live. The choir was live too. The kind of floaty boys choir is sample, but the big choir is all actual proper people. It's been a great experience to do that again, you know, both times. And there's nothing like hearing real people, especially something at that scale, playing music. That's something that I don't think any composer will ever get tired of, no matter how big a composer. I bet John Williams is still amazed at it every time he hears it. There's nothing like that thing. It's so special.
Oh, I can't even imagine writing something and then hearing it played by an orchestra, especially an orchestra like that. They're so fantastic.
No. They change little bits, because that natural human way of doing things, phrasing, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get when using samples.
Yes,
and you'd probably spend months on that to get it accurate.
Yes,
or even anywhere near. And that thing where people play it, they just round a little phrase up by themselves and just fade away and do little crescendos and all that kind of stuff that they do. That's the bit that's the best bit. That's the bit that makes it human and not computer. And, you know, just those little inflections, it makes it so much more special.
There's a piece called Holocene in the second.
That was the first one, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and there's all these bell sounds, and I just love that. Loved that in the background.
Yeah, that was all the synthy stuff. So that was the very first piece for the ice planet.
Yeah.
So
okay.
And I had that kind of bit in the middle where it was quite sort of celesta and a very high string line to kind of suggest a very kind of barren, icy thing that wasn't a nasty place, but wasn't quite hospitable yet. I have to give that kind of cold feeling, that kind of thing. Orchestra is by far my favourite thing. I'm sure a lot of composers will say that. It really is. And if you get to use it, it's just brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I think also being, because I did that classical thing when I was a kid, from 6 till 22, I spent playing in orchestras, at mm-hmm. various levels. That's also all I did, really. And, apart from playing in metal bands on the other side of me, So doing that thing was you just get used to the, sound of it. So when I got asked to do my first orchestral thing, which was Viva Pinata, it isn't that as scary as perhaps somebody hasn't done it before or sat in an orchestra for years. You know how it sounds, sat in the brass section for all those years. Mm-hmm. You just know how it sounds, don't you? You get used to it. You know which bit does what and which section does which bits, and it's just the best experience. It's the best thing.
Some of your favorite, classical composers? Who did you love playing? Who do you love listening to?
Well, I guess as a brass player, it's always the later stuff, because the earliest stuff's a bit... I really don't like that kind of traditional classical music, that kind of Bach, Mozart, Beethoven. It's not for me, really.
Mm-hmm.
I always think it's a bit 2-1-4-5-1, and that's a very bad generalization.
Yeah.
But I just... It's not my kind of thing. When it starts to get romantic, that's when I kind of start to get interested.
Sure.
So I think Wagner from there, but maybe... I like Elgar a lot, and Vaughan Williams and Walton, the English guys, and I like Sibelius symphonies, and the Brahms symphonies are great. I'm kind of the person, I'm a bit of a magpie, so I won't know everything about everybody. I'll know little bits that I really like.
Sure.
I think I've set pieces that I listen to all the time. I'm really boring like that. If it's not John Williams' Harry Potter, it'll be Sibelius 5 or Vaughan Williams 5 or Enigma Variations or... Petrushka or Firebird or there's a piece by Delius called La Calinda, which was an opera. Oh. he did a La Calinda piece, just an orchestral version, but just by itself without the choir. And that tune is my favourite tune of all time, probably.
Can you think of anything else you'd like to say about the process of writing for the Civ Games?
It was a pleasure from start to finish. Like, the people there are really nice. It all went like without a hitch. Mm-hmm. And I had to do practically no rewrites. I mean, maybe a little section. There was, if anything, they'd say, we like that section so much, can you make it a bit longer? And just to repeat it over again with different instruments because like the sound it was a bit like you know, it's, can you make it bigger? It's like, my God, can it get any bigger? You know, as I say, I got to that point in Fractal Queen, and right at the end, I was thinking, there's nothing left now. I've just run out of things to do. it's kind of, the woodwind are going completely mad. The strings are going mad. The brass are blowing themselves to bits. You know, I just couldn't think what more to add to that end section, you know, because it got so big. Mm-hmm. And the last section, that last kind of few bars of that Fractal Queen is my kind of homage to Stravinsky's Firebird.
Nice. Where,
you know, he holds that bit there with that long note and the brass play those chords. That's my kind of homage to that at the end of that piece to Firebird, because I like Firebird so much. Then, as I say, they're great people, and it's just, if they do another one, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what's left. I'd in brass band or something. I don't know. Just something. It's like, no, it was a real pleasure. It's turned out so well, and you know, I still get goosebumps listening to the music. So yeah. I think that if it still makes me feel that way, that's the best. I can't expect any more.
It's been so great to speak with you, and thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, I'm very pleased you want to talk to me at all in the first place.
You can find Grant's music on iTunes and Bandcamp, and we have more links up at patreon.com/JuneMedia. Thanks for listening to episode 12. I'm Emily Reese. Sam Keenan is our producer. Say hi, Sam.
Hi.
And we are June Media. Also, a huge thank you for being a patron, with special thanks to Ainsley Grams and Bev Wright. You can find us on YouTube and Facebook at June Media and on Twitter at Media June. June is spelled J-O-O-N.